Oh God. Oh my God.
It's been a few months now that I've been hearing you guys talk about
buzz balls.
Yeah.
And this is my inaugural ballin'.
Yeah.
And you my first
ball,
out.
Ball deep.
Only ball. I'm not sure how much of it would take to, you know, do away with 2 years of sobriety, but we'll find out.
I don't think this is going to make you want to drink.
No.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Pretty sure you're safe on having a little taster of that one.
I could go again.
It's like Boone's Farm.
Yeah.
It's like Smarties, like the candies, but.
No, that's like the medicine my dad used to make me take, like the fucking like red shit.
Oh, that's Boone's Farm.
Okay.
Yep. Oh, man.
Well, if Tiffany, if you're ever listening to this, which I know you won't be, but no, you're right. That was awful. Tiffany's my Florida friend who, when I'm like, my friends have been drinking buzz balls. They're this. And she was just like, no, I'm from Florida. I know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a Texas product, so, and it's made like founded by women. So we're allies.
Also shout out to Josie for providing this. Sparkle buddy Josie.
So this week we've got our buzz ball provided by Josie, and we are drinking I'm guessing it's a seasonal one. It's a witch's potion, and it is caramel apple flavored.
That's not what I get.
Or candy apple.
I would have never guessed that.
It's supposed to be candy apple?
Yeah.
Holy shit.
It's like those stupid fucking suckers.
It's
kind of like us. Just a bunch of stupid suckers. Yeah,
pretty much.
Peter, you're my sponsor now.
Okay, great.
I'll give you 10% of whatever we get for one of your kidneys. Don't worry, though.
Ooh,
10%? Nice. That's not bad.
Yeah.
Hey, it's my kidney, though. I'm the one doing all the work here.
That's just 10% of our next buzz ball. I'm trading organs for buzz balls these days.
Just replace them in your body with buzz balls.
Even though I found a much cheaper place to get buzz balls.
Mm-hmm.
Inflation's really hitting hard.
This just tastes like a horrible hangover.
Yeah.
It's not going to be good.
Yeah, it's a little sour.
A little horny.
Mm-hmm. A little bit horny.
Yeah.
Exactly, a buzz ball, sour and horny.
Yep.
Speaking of sexy, that's not a segue. Nope. We have Freeman here, who's looking sexy.
Aloha, thank
looking
you.
Fit.
Yeah, thank you. Freeman, long time. Are you a cage dancer or a sparkle buddy? Shit,
I'm a cage dancer, long time listener, first time caller.
I've said it a million times. How do I not know?
It is.
It is. Welcome. It's Freeman's first time. Yeah, and you picked a surprisingly fun movie.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it much more than the reviews, but you know, that's because I'm
my
pretty
first,
cheap and easy.
So this week on Cage Match, Colon Roundabout Way, meeting Nicolas Cage. I'm your host, Sean, here with my co-host,
Nick,
and our producer,
Peter. Hello.
And we are discussing the 1993 movie, Amos and Andrew. There, all the information up front.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, we'll go through characters and actors and stuff because it's actually fucking dotted with good actors.
Yeah. We just haven't gotten all that information out at the beginning of a show.
No, we've been terrible about that. Sorry, John.
So when I started this movie last night, I saw what I'm assuming was the poster art from the original release of Nick Cage and Sam Jackson handcuffed together with a cop driving behind them. Mm-hmm. And my immediate thought was to text Peter and Nick and say, I call not Sam Jackson, just to be safe.
And I think that's a cowardly move.
This is a movie with some blackface inadvertently.
It's not inadvertent.
Oh, it's not inadvertent.
It's very inadvertent. Yeah. It's very inadvertent.
Yeah. It's night ops.
Is there two or three blackface moments in this?
Three. Well, okay,
there's three. Yeah.
But one guy twice.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
He just really likes his night ops.
Yeah. Night ops.
So Freeman, as our guest, you get the lovely job of trying to give a plot summary for us. As best you can.
I planned ahead here.
Ooh, a script. I like it.
Yes, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Just the Wikipedia article. Nice.
Rich and famous, but not famous enough, black man Andrew Sterling buys a summer home on some Massachusetts island. His racist neighbors, unaware of their new neighbor, try and get the guy killed in his own home for being black. The villains in this whole thing are most definitely Phil and Judy Gilman. They're
I love the Gilmans. They're so horny and racist.
They're just so like, it's just immediately they pull the covers off, blatant racism. They set everything in motion. And the local sheriff just eats it up.
It's an election year.
It is. He decides that he's going to put on a spectacle. and help this out with his political aspirations. Of course, they end up screwing it all up, and then they need a fall guy. Enter Nicolas Cage, Amos O'Dell. Amos is already in police custody, so it's nice and handy. They can just take him and try to make him be the fall guy for all this after they finish shooting up poor Andrew Sterling's home. It's just awful.
Did you write "it's just awful"?
No. Oh, okay. No.
It was a killer delivery.
There's like inflection cues.
Since this is a comedy, just things keep going wrong and wrong. It's like everything that can go wrong pretty much does. Nobody manages to do anything right. It gets a little over kind of long and drawn out. I get a little bit like, just like, come on, guys, like move things along. But it is tidy. It does. It trucks right along.
Tight 90.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I mean, like, everything ties up nicely. Like, they lay out the jokes. They, you know, set them up, knock them down.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. At some point, it gets confused that there must be a hostage situation. And then it comes out that Andrew Sterling is the hostage. Cue up my favorite character in this whole thing is Reverend Fenton Brunch.
Oh, he's so
Fenton
good.
Brunch! Yeah. That was my second text after starting this movie.
Giancarlo Esposito. Yes. So fucking good.
Yes. Yeah. I did not expect that. That brought me a lot of joy. I really loved the multiple buses loading up with all the protesters and the singing, and that they were all going to the island to save Brother Sterling. But somehow, though, because the police are just such morons, early in this whole hostage situation, Amos and Andrew just walk out the back door of Andrew's house and go next door to the neighbor's place, the Gilmans. And they just hide out there. We get all kinds of conflict. Then the Gilmans come home and they're like, and Nicolas Cage is like, I want your car. And poor Mr. Gilman is like, no. I'm not giving you that car. It's a gift from my wife.
Oh, yeah, his second wife.
Yeah. And so then Nicolas Cage turns to Mr. Gilman's wife, Phil's wife, and says, hey, Judy, I'm sorry. We got to take the car. Yeah. And to that point, Phil's like, no, not Judy. It was my second wife that gave me this car.
Judy is my fucking wife.
Yeah, apparently the third wife. The other bit in here is that for some reason, Nicolas Cage keeps ordering pizza everywhere he goes.
Well, he has been in jail.
Yeah.
Well, and the second time he orders pizza is because he's trying to steal the pizza van so he can have a getaway car.
Yeah.
Yes. I think also, though, he did see, if you remember, he did see the pizza girl going into the police station.
That's his other quirky character trait, he likes underage girls.
Yeah, they should have probably played that a little different, because he's like a pretty likable criminal, and then it's like, drop that in there. Come on.
Yeah.
I honestly thought they were going to lead into it a little more, and I was like, oh no, how taboo is this going to go?
Yeah.
I was kind of worried when he asked her age, and she said 17, and then he didn't stop. That like something really awkward was going to happen. It was endearing and heartwarming that she just wrote his phone number, her phone number on his hand.
Yeah.
And we never see her again, thankfully.
Yeah,
we see her one more time. She drops the tape off with the press.
True.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. Debbie does give the press the tape. That's a good point.
Ultimately, it gets down to the point where Andrew's just trying to get home and have a quiet night. Amos just wants to get off the damn island. Mm-hmm. He wants to get to Canada. And probably just get off in general because he's been in prison. And so he ends up getting the car and Andrew decides, I think that he's just going home. He's just done with all this stuff. He wants a quiet night. But then he's out in the middle of this field and he sees his house on fire. And then he can hear the bloodhounds chasing after him. And at this
Led
point,
by Bloodhound Bob.
Yes, yeah. Bloodhound Bob. And at this point, then Amos shows up in the car driving through the field, picks up Andrew. And then next thing you know it, they're on a boat leaving the island.
Yeah, they just like get out.
They just dip.
That's it. Yeah.
And I'm just like, this is an island. Like the police are trying to control this whole situation.
Yeah, it's like maybe they put out a bolo for like cops. White guy, black guy
there
in a car.
There was a random checkpoint on the island, but no checkpoint at the ferry terminal. Like it's an island.
They're
no one
bad
comes on
cops.
Or off. Yeah, they are really bad cops.
That's my feeling on this one. The theme of this entire movie is cops are dumb dumbs. All right, so this we touched on it at the beginning, but like this movie is packed with fucking actors, yeah. right? So Nick Cage is Amos Odell. Sam cool. Jackson.
I love Nicolas Cage.
Yeah, he's great. Sam Jackson is Andrew Sterling. Brad Dourif is Donnie Donaldson. He's probably most famous for most of us as Grima Wormtongue from The Lord of the Rings. Sean doesn't know what that is.
I don't know what a Harry Potter is either.
Yeah.
Nerd.
Dabney Coleman is the chief of police.
Who's that?
So he was in like Tootsie and War Games back in the day with Broderick.
Yeah,
he was a little boy.
Yeah. Before he killed a guy.
Yeah, and then You've Got Mail. He's just like one of those guys who's been around for a long time. He's played a doofy cop before too.
Yeah, just official with a mustache. Yeah.
Definitely seen him around. I just don't know what he's been.
I've seen them. You know, it's like that face.
It's a lot of character actors.
So Michael Lerner is the Gilman.
Phil
Gilman. And he's just another one of those. He's been in like Barton Fink, Harlem Nights. He was in the Godzilla movie with Matthew Broderick.
After he killed a guy.
Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know. Matthew Broderick ran that guy over.
Giancarlo Esposito. Yeah. And then my favorite is Bob Balaban, who plays the guy who is like a hostage negotiator on the phone. He's so good.
Yeah.
R.A. Fink.
Yeah.
That was my favorite running bit throughout the whole thing, because he's like calls into Andrew's house after Amos and Andrew have left. The chief of police is just tied to a chair and can't talk. And he's just talking through the voicemail and just like,
yes.
Turns out like just regressing his own memories. Like, I wanted a pony. My parents got me a turtle. Yeah. I had 9 turtles, but I still wanted that pony. It just goes forever.
My favorite quote of his is actually my favorite from this movie. It's just this scene where like there's mayhem going on everywhere. He's in the cop car with his like remote sat phone or whatever, and he's just talking to nobody. He's just monologuing. I remember my 11th birthday. I had a party and my mom and dad hired a clown. It was a very, very funny clown, and he juggled and did magic tricks. My friend Ruby peed on the floor. She was really embarrassed, but I had a good time. Then my mom called him for my 12th birthday, and his wife answered and said, oh, he's not a clown anymore. He's going to go to school to be a dental technician. I don't think I'll ever forget that moment. <It's> like, driving this guy to kill everybody.
Yeah. I enjoyed this film. I'm just going to say that up top, that this was a fun movie that people could pick apart me, but still enjoy.
I really enjoyed myself with it. Just like what second scene getting a close up on a lawn jockey. It really set the tone for me. And I was like, oh, OK, that's going to be the problem in this movie. And it was
immediately too. Yeah. I mean, like the conflict starts 4 minutes in or something like that. It's like they see Sam Jackson driving a car. They think it's somebody else. And then they see him in his now home. Don't realize he's supposed to be there. And
they think it's like their neighbor because these are summer homes. So they're like, they don't see people often, but they think it's like one of the neighbors, and one of the neighbors' kids is like being held hostage.
Ah, the Gilmans. Yeah. You're right. They are the villains.
They are the villains, like from the jump.
And then as soon as like Amos and Andrew are in the house and they realize that they made a mistake, they're trying to like play all nice, all goody goody. It's like, oh, we'd love to have you and your wife over.
Even if she is white.
Even if she is white. But then like.
Turns out she's not.
Yeah. Amos has.
Spoiler.
Amos has their interview with the press junket, and they're not actually the press, but they want to like, they're kind of like ambulance chasers.
Something
like. Yeah, they're like that, what's his face from Nightcrawler. Like they just go out and take.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Right. Yeah.
That was a good movie.
That is a fun moment though, when Cage puts on the video and he knows that it's outing these people being racist shits, and they're just watching, just played it back and like, forth. Well, what he's saying,
I'm no racist, but when you see a black man in a house carrying stereo curtain, you know what's going on.
Oh yeah, I love I'm no racist, and then they have a dog named Rommel.
Rommel.
This is one of those
also films. That dog is awesome.
That dog,
that dog was great.
I do love the line of like Sam Jackson, Andrew is allergic to dogs, and Rama wants to shake his hand, and Nicolas Cage is like, shake his hand. It's like, that dog doesn't like black people. It's like, well, he's not gonna like the next one if you don't shake his hand.
Amos is very pragmatic when it comes to that stuff. Yeah. I really appreciate him calling, because Samuel Jackson is great at getting righteous.
Yeah, he cuts through it pretty well.
But, you know, there are points where I'm like, there hasn't been a joke in a minute. And I'm like, this is touching on some serious like racial stuff. Like the chief of police like gets his boots knocked off when he's like tied up, and like he runs out and he gets home alone with broken glass. I'm like, all right, there's the comedy.
Yeah,
I love Dabney Coleman after his feet got fucked up with the glass. Anytime he's running or walking, he has to do that like high stepping thing. Yeah, why did he call him the N-word when he went in? So he goes into the chief of police goes into the house because he technically holds all the cards.
Yeah,
and he's being a super racist douche. Mm-hmm. And then Sam Jackson clocks him.
Frying pans him.
Yeah, just pan to the head.
Not a good clank.
But like, why did he say that?
I felt like he was trying to lean into the character bit to try to control Amos more.
The kind read is, I don't care about this person, so you don't hold any like.
Oh yeah, trying to erase Amos's leverage.
But you could have done that without dropping the N-bomb.
Yeah. Yeah, but he does get paid for it, so I mean.
And then later on, he says he's gonna charge Andrew with a attempted murder.
Yes, for clocking him in the face.
I forgot about that part.
Yeah, so you know, just bad cops all around.
And that kind of, I feel like that gets Andrew on the run with Amos.
Yeah.
So that kind of brings them a little more as kindred spirits at that point.
I will say,
certainly helps endear
their friendship at the end. I'm like, this wasn't earned, but I'm glad they found it.
I mean, you only need 90 minutes.
I know, but like they're just kind of like Andrew's a hostage. They have a talk about like race relations. They get into a tussle in the backyard. They're best friends.
Yeah. Well, I'm not gonna say that like they really nailed it, but
I enjoy their time on screen together.
Yeah. Certainly, like I don't think either of them changed much. Sam Jackson did find his way a little more back towards the center because of Amos's constant calling him on his shit.
Yeah.
Which was good. I can't say that Amos became a better person through this film.
No. Still has a lousy sense of direction.
I mean, he still tried to lean in on that 17-year-old.
Yeah.
It's true.
He was originally arrested for delinquency, aiding in the delinquency of a minor. That was the official charge.
The lines on all that are rough. Freeman, you said that you were going to try and watch this twice. Did you end up watching it twice?
Yes.
How did it hold up on the second watching within, you know, 2 weeks or whatever?
Well, so the first one I was with Elizabeth and we watched, well, like as she said, I just put it on and she reluctantly was in the room. about a half an hour in, she's kind of starting to pay attention. The last third, she definitely was like, okay, I'm on board with this. And I think she enjoyed it. We had a good laugh the first go around. The second go, you know where everything is going. So it's not quite as funny, but also like there were things I was excited for that I was happy about. Like honestly, like the whole scene where the chief of police does drop the N-word and then gets clocked with a frying pan. I know that's coming. Like, and I feel like this was Samuel Jackson is like in his prime where he's like full throated and he gets onto these righteous like speeches. And it's just it's hard not to love that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I will say this to the point is like it's very hard to not have some kind of not necessarily bias, but like you're watching it twice in like a week, 2 weeks. So it's hard not to remember all these jokes and have some kind of
like preemptive
disassociate with a lot of the humor. Like if you had given it a couple months, like you may have forgotten one or two of the little things.
Yeah, comedy's hard because it relies so much on like surprise.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, John and I were talking about this. He watched it with me and we had subtitles originally, but our version of it had commercials and shit. And it was like, this is terrible. And we were talking about how subtitles, there's like a couple times when you don't really want them. It's like comedies and stand-up comedians and it's like same vibe. It spoils it because you see it that split second. Oh, your brain is processing the joke already. It's kind of the same thing. If you've already watched it recently, you're gonna know what's coming, right? Like you know that there's gonna be the jokes about whatever, pizza or like sex toys with white people.
Oh dude, the sex toy drawer with the tube of sex grease.
I like
love
that.
Sex grease.
You kind of knew that was coming, man. White people are weird and crazy or whatever he says.
Yeah,
he just says white people.
My favorite was when he leans in on them later when they tie him up with the BDSM gear and he's just like perverts. I think that's my favorite quote.
Sam Jackson, don't yuck their yum, but they did call the cops on you, so, you know.
Yeah, I mean, they suck.
You have other things you can criticize about them. Leave their sex life out of it.
I looked it up because I was curious. You know,
sex greases?
No, I got the idea on that one. I cracked that code.
Can you explain to me later?
Yeah, I'll let you know. Michael Lerner, Phil Gilman, he's 17 years older than the actress who plays his wife. And it's like, oh, okay. I mean, that tracks for what the third wife situation is there.
Absolutely.
But yeah, just looking at them, I was like, how is this working? It's like, ah.
Well, he was a lawyer and he worked on the Chicago 7 case.
Yeah, he was part of the Chicago 7.
Which side?
Yeah.
When the police chief does bring Nick Cage in and sends him into the house, the part where Nick is kind of prancing through the entryway to the house and he looks back and he's like jumping, and I felt like that was just like a little kind of hat tip to like all of his physical comedy, and he's just like, I'm gonna go prancing into the house now, and like.
Yeah, and it absolutely works in this situation too, because, you know, he knows he's just there to be a fall guy.
Yep.
And he's going to get released, so he's just having fun with it. But yes, it definitely smacks pretty well of some of his older prancy moments.
I do like Nick Cage's little slapdash MacGyvered invention when he's brings Andrew out on the porch, where he gets a coat hanger, tapes it to the front of the shotgun, and then has it around Andrew's neck to like lead him.
Yeah. Want $1 million in a helicopter.
I love the $1 million in a helicopter. It just kept coming back.
Oh man. Why did the press show up? Was it because of Reverend Brunch?
No, it's because of the Gilmans, because they're like, we should be on the news. This should be big news. So they call the press.
The Gilmans are the villains.
So yeah, they keep escalating the situation. They make it worse every time.
I mean, also if the cops would have just been like, we got told there was a black guy, we're sorry. It would have sucked for them, but you know what? In America, guys still would have been elected.
Yeah, he would have won his election, probably.
He probably would have gotten more votes.
You just put Donnie on administrative leave for a couple of weeks.
Exactly.
And boom.
Little slap on the wrist for old Donnie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, fuck it. So you said earlier the second time you texted us was Reverend
Brunch.
Fenton Brunch, but it was actually when Donnie paints his face black or like rubs dirt all over it, and you're like, also not this guy. Like, do not want to be this guy in the photos. You know, you could just do a whole you could do a whole photo montage of any one of us randomly selected in blackface. I'm sure that would work fine. Just Freeman in blackface.
I'm not doing fuck all with that. We're not replacing Sam Jackson, and we're not doing any blackface characters.
That's probably for the best.
I found one of the scenes where there's a couple different non-blackface people hanging out with Nick Cage.
So does Sean have to be a 17-year-old girl?
Yes, please.
Judy Gilman.
No, amazingly, they're never like officially in a scene at the exact same time. So it's in the before they have it, like, enlisted Amos fully into the like scheme, they're in the like interrogation room or whatever, so it's Dabney Coleman, the chief of police, and then Donnie kind of in the background, and Cage with his fucking foreplay tattoo.
Donnie and whiteface. Yeah, the foreplay tattoo is so dumb, and
his
funny.
Tattoos look so shit.
They're so drawn
his
on.
His gold tooth.
I actually kind of liked the gold
tooth. I love
tooth.
The gold
like,
tooth.
Also, I love like yet another Nick Cage movie starts where Nick Cage is working out in a jail cell.
Yep.
Yeah, doing handstand pushups or whatever. Push-ups,
yeah.
I mean, go with what you know, right?
Okay, yeah. It's a small space.
Yeah, so this came out in 93.
Yeah.
94 was a pretty good year for Nicolas Cage.
Yeah. And then 95, he was in Kiss of Death with Sam Jackson again.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah. He bigger.
Much bigger, yeah.
Much bigger.
Sea monkeys.
Sea monkeys. See,
they did earn their friendship.
All right.
Deep conversations.
Yeah, that was a great conversation.
While Cage smokes the last of the Gilman's joint.
Yeah.
What's it? It's a... I wanted my family to be more like sea monkey family.
The big smiles on the box. And I did get sea monkeys when I was younger, and they were such a fucking waste. It's like, it was kind of cool.
Well, like, they're just like shrimp, right?
Just like brine shrimp. Yeah. And it was cool to see them hatch, and then they're like fluttering around, and then they literally just all die, and there's just these corpses like waving around on the bottom of this little jug.
Love it.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
And it stinks.
yeah, they're pretty gnarly.
I didn't have a lot in terms of quotes from this film, but the one that that resonated with me the most, because it's definitely something I fucking said. Nick Cage talking about his phobia of needles, and Sam Jackson like, "You got them tattoos? They did those with needles, right?" He's like, "Yeah, but I was drunk."
And the tattoos show. Yeah, you were definitely drunk.
Yeah,
I do have a tattoo that I do not remember getting.
Which one is it?
My TARDIS.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
It was in San Francisco. So it was fucking cold. So like by the time I came to in a coffee shop with my buddy Tony, I'm all bundled up and we're just talking. Like I sober up and I'm like driving back to my buddy's place because I'm crashing at a friend's house. And he like texts me. He's like, "Hey, where are you at?" And I'm just like, "I'm driving back." It's like, I'm like, "Oh." And he's like, what? And I like roll up my sleeve and I'm like, "I think I got a tattoo."
Freeman, do you have tattoos?
Just one. Just a little tribute for my dad when he passed away.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I couldn't remember.
Yeah, he had a, after this, I can go upstairs. We've got a family photo book that we got from my family when we visited this summer. And there's some pictures of my father before he met my mother when he was younger and some photos of him that I had never seen. And I think one of them has, no. I mean, I saw plenty of that growing up. My parents walked around naked. I got a weird household.
No, same.
So he used to have a tattoo on his arm that just said "fuck you."
Cool.
And then he got a cover up tattoo. Yeah. And so the surfboard for his devil and surfboard, the surfboard covered up his "fuck you."
Okay, so did your parents have any tattoos?
No.
Or do they?
No. Yeah,
no. If they got a tattoo, what do you think your dad would have? If there was one thing to immortalize on his body. God,
I mean, my parents are fairly Catholic.
Yeah,
so I think it would be for him like a cross, but
like a cool Danny Trejo cross.
But like what it really should be is probably like a gin and tonic.
Oh,
but,
cool. Yeah, that'd be sick.
You mean your dad wouldn't get a tattoo that said "born to lose"?
No.
Pops had one of those right on his forearm. He had all kinds of good tats.
And my mom, I don't know. My mom really loves swearing. So I think she might just, she could have "fuck you."
A secret "fuck you."
Yeah, a secret
somewhere
"fuck you."
Dad would never see.
Exactly.
My dad only has one tattoo, but it's a dude on a motorcycle doing a wheelie through a giant skull that's split in half with flames jumping out the back of it all. And it says,
I love my son.
No. It's basically like a "live fast, die young" kind of tattoo.
The hell?
Yeah.
That is awesome.
That's pretty amazing.
He's an old biker.
Yeah, I get it.
My ex father-in-law, Meredith's dad, didn't have any tattoos, but had like an enamel tooth put in at one point and had it custom done with the
cyanide pill.
No. Maybe. John's weird. No, he had the Rolling Stone lips put on there. So it's super tiny, but like he'd like open his mouth. Like if you looked at the back of his mouth, you could see that.
That's so weird and specific.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Where do you guys put this movie in the like comedy bracket of Nick Cage movies? Not in like comedies broad.
Right, in terms of Nick Cage movies, it's up there because there aren't a lot of great comedies in his bracket.
That's what
I was
thinking.
Very true.
It's like it was funnier and more fun than I thought it was going to be, certainly.
That was kind of one of my thoughts going through this was like, hey, I know you had the unenviable task early on of trying to gather and assemble the original cast of your brackets.
Mm-hmm.
And you had to make some just split decisions based on reading, watching trailers and reading a handful of reviews.
Yep. It was a fever dream.
So my question to you then, Mr. Peter Producer, would be of the other comedy elements or the other movies in the comedy half of the bracket, what would have you thrown out knowing what you know now?
Well, it's kind of funny because like, I think honestly what would have gotten punted is a 16 seed, which was Army of One.
I was just thinking about that. I was like,
I think that's the one that would have been 86 for it, because this one was really low rated movie.
So good.
Is the only reason Amos and Andrew didn't make it in. And the preview trailer for it is not that good.
Fair.
So like all the different bits and pieces of it, it's like watching the trailer for Army of One. I was like, we have to put this in. That voice is fucking insane.
Yes. Yeah. No. Yes.
Me.
Yeah, exactly.
Man, America makes the best chicken wings.
So like at that point, it's like that's the one that would have gotten punted. And then I don't think there's any chance Amos and Andrew would have made it as far as Army of One would have gone.
Very true. Yeah.
So I think that it's still like I stand by it. I mean, like It could happen to you probably is one that I would hot swap this for that without blinking an eye.
I would have kept it happening to you. I would lose Family Man personally.
Yeah, I could see that.
Because that movie's not funny at all.
I mean, the best part of that movie is just Jeremy Piven.
I was going to say Piven is the best part, which I never would say about anything ever.
Yeah, this is the one time that sentence will be uttered.
Or Trapped in Paradise.
Nope, I stand by that fucking movie.
That movie's god awful.
It's so fucking stupid and it's pretty funny.
I need to rewatch that again.
I was literally just talking about that at a bar with somebody who randomly was like, did you ever see that one Nick Cage movie with like John Lovitz? And I was like, yes. Of course I have.
Yeah.
I mean, then I'm looking at other stuff. I'm like, I just did not enjoy Matchstick Men, which I should have because I liked everything else. Like, I love the cast. I liked the director. I just didn't like the movie.
It was too predictable for something that was supposed to have a twist to be like, oh, yeah, the girl's totally playing him. She's conning the con artist. And it's like, I saw that coming halfway through the movie. And it's like,
I don't have fond memories of Honeymoon in Vegas, but I'm glad it was on there.
I mean,
Roy Bacon, maybe.
Yeah, it's got the skydiving Elvises. The
best thing I will say about Honeymoon in Vegas is when I went to that Nicolas Cage themed drag show, somebody did a Honeymoon in Vegas act as a flying Elvis,
which is fantastic.
Yeah.
Did they parachute into the drag show?
No.
Coward.
For real.
I mean, there was a roof. It was a small place.
Hopefully there was at least some
coward.
Hopefully there was at least some silk involved.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, there was that.
You understand art.
Yeah.
There was that. But yeah, there were no like aerial acrobatics.
Were there aerial acrobatics? Yeah. Oh, nipples, dude. Nipples fucking rock.
We maybe have been doing this too long. I don't know.
How many more movies we got left before we never have to talk to each other again?
Still like 20.
Well, and the man keeps making movies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm still waiting for one of his shows to come out so we can like talk about those for a few weeks.
You can serialize it.
Yeah. Shows will be great. I really can't wait for Carpenter's Son too.
Oh my God.
The Jesus horror
people are really mad about it already.
Have you been reading like,
have you heard about this, Freeman?
On trailers?
I have not.
They're just people just being like,
oh wait,
real angry. Like just like fucking Bible beaters and Jesus freaks just freaking out.
Yes.
Like, did we really need a horror movie about Jesus?
We got one about Winnie the Pooh, so fucking suck it up.
Also, Jesus has been in public domain for so much longer.
Jesus is part of the public domain.
So yeah, he plays ostensibly a Jesus dad character. He's the carpenter's dad, you know, and the carpenter's son of the movie. But it's also like some weird horror shit, biblical kind of crap. So who knows? It's probably going to be dog shit, but
oh, like, man,
fuck yeah, we'll go see that.
Absolutely. No, if it's at least as good as Long Legs, I'll be happy.
Yeah, there you go.
I just pulled up the Carpenter's Son trailer. First one, they aren't even trying to hide it anymore. Everything out beyond that, Bible verses.
Looking
up what you're gonna say in the Bible.
Father, forgive them for they know not what they do.
Ugh.
Yeah, just a lot of that. Although I like the last temptation of Cage. Nicolas Cage as Jesus Christ was not on my bingo card for 2025. That one's good.
I think he's the dad. I don't think he's Jesus.
Yeah. I think he's a little old to be the son in the Carpenter's Son.
Oh, wait,
he's got range.
Wait. If he's the dad, but not the father.
But not the father.
Oh, people in the religion are crazy. All right.
We are truly living in a godless world, just speedrunning the end times with this one.
Okay. Who's your favorite character from this movie? Freeman, you can start.
Maybe it's an outside angle. I'm going to go with Stacy, the pizza delivery girl.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I appreciate that she shot down Nick Cage.
Yeah.
She played very curious. She really leaned in like she was interested in him. But then she's like, no, you're old and you're a creeper and I'm getting off this island.
Nice. Good pick.
I really liked Phil Gilman. Not as a human being, but as a heel throughout the movie.
It's like, pretty good.
He's
always got playing the angle.
Yeah, and he's just so dislikable. The fact that he was willing to like let Amos kill his current wife over like rather than give up the like Mercedes that he was given by his second wife is so good.
I like the dog.
Rommel?
Yeah. Also,
wait,
I like
you're a big Rommel fan too.
I liked.
Put it on Mike.
I liked the press guy.
Weird Andrew eyebrows Lake? Guy.
Yeah.
No, it was Andrew. Was it?
I can't remember.
His last name was Lake.
Yeah. Waldo Lake.
Waldo. That's Lake. It. Waldo.
I liked him.
He was a pretty good character.
Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah.
When like the cops like, I need to confiscate that tape. He's like, I have a First Amendment right. And chief police just goes, fuck the First Amendment.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, that's real.
Yeah.
Oh, this actually had a, sorry, I know you're about to say yours. This had a joke that I had to look up when Amos first goes with the, we're Amos and Andrew.
Oh, the Amos and Andy thing?
Yeah.
Oh, you didn't know that?
No. You think I listen to a lot of 1920s Minstrels? Radio plays?
Just history. I don't know, man. Like, I know about it.
I don't know.
Well, yeah. I think that's a setup of the whole... I might have
known about
this whole movie.
The whole reason it's called that. Yeah.
It's a lean... Like, all of this is just, like, an over-the-top, like we're just going to make an example, I feel, of like racist themes.
Right.
Yeah. Like it's just, we're going to layer over and over, like hence the dog Rommel.
Yeah.
Right. And if anyone doesn't know, so Amos and Andy was a radio play for quite a while that was incredibly,
60s.
Incredibly popular, but it was just like minstrel blackface-y kind of whatever.
Which they were on the radio. They didn't have to do the blackface, but they did.
They sure definitely did.
Yeah, but it was
hear it.
Got them into character.
Written and voiced by two white guys.
Of course.
Yes. So, yeah.
Yeah. So at some point, you know, Nick Cage is like, no, oh, it's us. It's, you know, we're Amos and Andrew. And he's like, you do not get to say that.
I'm not even going to educate you on the history of that one.
I will say like, so yeah, go into like, you know, this is just like, you know, the absurdity of like all racism. So when the church group shows up, when Brunch shows up and like he instigates
Fenton Brunch,
he instigates a riot at the house and which leads to the house being burned down. And then he books it real quick.
Yeah.
Oh, we set this man's house on fire. We got to go.
Like, yeah.
Well, my favorite character was Dabney Coleman as the chief. I think that is such a well done comedic role for somebody playing it straight. But, you know, just always obsessed with his like polling numbers and everything. And just like him getting more mummified as he gets more and more hurt the entire time.
Well, and he just keeps like at any point.
And he doesn't win.
No, at any point he could have just been like,
makes it
this
worse.
Has gone too far.
Yeah.
And just, makes it worse. Oh, I know why they got off the island. Because according to, what was Dilbert Dabney fucking blackface cop?
Donnie. Donnie Donaldson.
Because they find, because Donnie breaks back into the house because they think that Amos is still in there. And then the SWAT comes in and he gets flashbanged. And then they pull him out being like, we got Amos in front of the press. And then they realize it's Donnie. So they take Donnie in and they're like, we caught him.
Yeah.
But then they still bring the bloodhounds to look for the hostages that they couldn't find. So they're searching.
They don't want the press to know that.
Yeah.
All right. Fair enough.
Oh, and one extra bit from the second playthrough, because I didn't let it run to the end of the credits on the first playthrough. There is an extra scene at the end of the dogs running through a field with Rommel.
We forgot the most important thing of this movie.
The Sir Mix-a-Lot song.
Yes. I miss when movies had raps.
Yeah. When you have just a wrap up song at the end that kind of tells you everything.
Mm-hmm. And as a kid that grew up in the Seattle area, as soon as I hear Mix's voice, I turn to Elizabeth and I go, That's fucking Sir Mix-a-Lot. And I'm like, why? Just fucking why?
There is absolutely no reason for Sir Mix-a-Lot to be there.
What was the last line of the song? I can't remember.
It was the N-word. Sir Mix-a-Lot's famous first N-word. There was a guy who had Sir Mix-a-Lot's previous phone number. This was just like maybe 8 years ago. And he would constantly be getting text messages and stuff from people trying to get a hold of Sir Mix. I don't know. I don't know what I should call him.
Mister.
Yeah. Mister.
Mister Alok.
Mister
Alot.
Mister Sir Mix. Alot. And he would have to like keep telling people like this is not his phone number anymore until eventually Sir Mix-a-Lot actually was like, hey, I hear you keep getting my messages.
Amazing. Did he make a voicemail that was like, yay, it's Sir Mix-a-Lot. You got the wrong fucking number.
He raps it. Yeah. He's like, hey, if you're looking for Sir Mix-a-Lot. I'm not going to go any further with that because that borders on racist again. Number,
it is not.
Oh!
Thank you. Thank you.
Cut it. We're done. This podcast is over.
I was surprised to learn that Mix was straight edge, like in terms of like no booze.
Oh yeah,
like just completely no booze, no drugs.
Yeah, he seems like he'd be pouring cognac all over people's butts.
Yeah, I ended up backstage at one of his
concerts.
I guess
you don't have to drink the cognac; you can just pour it.
A bunch of guys were like, "Let's light a joint and pass it around." And I'm standing with them, and all of a sudden, Mix smells it. And he's like, "All y'all tossed out," and we all got tossed out of the green room because I was standing by the idiot smoking the joint. And
Why is it called the green room? Come
I know.
On.
I was like, don't be a bummer, man.
When I saw Sir Mix-a-Lot, they had a hype man just throwing Dick's Burgers out
that's
over the crowd.
Tight.
So
I would love that.
Yeah, so like you're just in the crowd eating a Dick's Burger watching Sir Mix-a-Lot. Most Seattle thing I've done in a long time.
I wish I had a Sir Mix-a-Lot story.
Yeah.
Final thoughts, Freeman.
Fenton Reverend Brunch.
Try that one again.
Reverend Fenton Brunch.
Brunch.
Take two.
Big balls.
My final take, don't drink Buzz Balls, kids.
Yeah.
We're going to lose. I'm going to lose us the sponsorship we don't have.
Yeah, right.
No way. Peter will cut that.
Drink.
We were talking about Robo Tripping last episode.
Yeah, so. We're looking for
drink,
that big
Buzz
ball
balls.
Money.
Well, then, Sea Monkeys. Yeah. Right. I want my family more like a sea monkey family.
Yeah. Nick, Sean, final thoughts.
I think this movie's a real treat. I think people should watch it unless you have problems with
racism.
Well, no, I mean, like, everybody should have problems with racism. If you have problems with people being portrayed as racist, then you might have an issue with this.
Yeah, that's fair.
If you're like, those nice white people can't be racist. They said so at the beginning, and I trust white people.
Yeah,
I will
say might be part of the problem.
I will say through the lens of time and media literacy, there are aspects of this that probably don't hold up great, but I don't think it's atrocious in any way.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah,
I think all in all, this was kind of a surprise movie for me where it's sort of like, ooh, this was better than I thought. And I even had you as a heads up being like, it's not that bad. And it was
better than you thought.
Better than I thought. I had a good time. But yeah, so next episode, we've got 1993's Deadfall, which is starring Michael Biehn, your favorite, and he marks it as one of his worst movies ever.
Awesome. I love Michael Biehn.
Yeah. So that's going to be something. Wait, did you want to say something on Mike?
Well, my mom came through. I texted her asking what my dad's tattoo says, and it's even better than I remembered. It says, death is certain, life is not.
I love your dad.
Dude, right. My dad's pretty chill.
That's pretty good. All right. Well, thank you all for listening. Thanks to our Sparkle Buddies, Josh, Josie, Matt, Adam, Bill, and Stuart. And to our Cage Dancers, Ira, John, Freeman, Nathan, and Cameron. And to Bill Panks for our intro music. And yeah, we'll see you in 2 weeks for Michael Biehn's least favorite movie.
Deadfall.
He got paid for Alien 3, so
So where are we putting this thing?
I don't know. He got paid a lot to like die. Like,
yeah.
Or actually, I don't even think he was in it. I think they just used like a photo of him, but he got paid for it. That would be my favorite movie. Get paid a bunch of money to not do anything.
Yeah. That sounds awesome. Let's get rich. Buzzballs.
Yeah. Buzzballs. I think that's their theme song.
Buzzballs.
We can write a Buzzballs theme song.
Buzzballs.
Texas, huh?
Texas, huh? Buzzballs.
Oh, we got to make some truck nuts with those.
Holy fuck.
Buzz nuts.
That's actually pretty good.
Yeah, if you want to get pulled over real fucking fast, give yourself some Buzzballs biggies.
Truck nuts.
One of my favorite.
Just swanging and danging.
One of the best jokes I ever came up with off the cuff, and it didn't get any attention, which pissed me off. It was on back when I was on Facebook. A friend of mine from high school asked why is there no female equivalent of truck nuts? And in her comments I just wrote camel toe, and nobody laughed at it.
Did you spell it T-O-W?
Yeah.
Good. No one laughed. Fuck them.
Well, Facebook is full of losers.
That's true.
This was when Facebook was cool.
Facebook. The end.
Bye.
Bye.
moved on to Reddit.
I have two questions for you, Peter.
Yeah.
First question, how many buzzballs to get you a tattoo?
Oof.
Second question, think about it. How many buzzballs to get you a tattoo of Freeman's mustache?
Holy shit.
Just get a tattoo of a mustache under your mustache.
That's smart. Yeah. Anytime I shave it off, I still am mustached.
Yeah, you're still yeah, safe.
That's a good idea.
I was thinking on your butt, but whatever.
A butt stash?
Just a stash. Just
put it wherever.
Yeah. It's a fine mustache.
I think I would have to have two biggies.
Three full liters?
Three full liters.
Now, they wouldn't legally be allowed to give you one.
One of our friends probably can do a tattoo.
Yeah.